Welcome back. It's great to see all of you back again. And I recognize about, say, 99% of the faces here, and it's really a treat to have you join us again. I'm Dan Diker, the Deputy Director of the ICA Program and a Foreign Policy Analyst here at the Jerusalem Center. On behalf of our President, Dr. Dori Gold, who is here with us in the front row, I welcome you warmly to what should be a very important discussion presentation by Brigadier General Reserve Shalom Harari. What's happening in Gaza today, probably if summed up in one word, is quite complex and very confusing. And Brigadier General Harari, if there's one person that really knows the Palestinian portfolio from upside down and right side up, it's General Harari. Has been for some 20 to 25 years in the territories, following very closely the developments within what has been the ruling Fatah Party, the PLO in general, and now the developments within Hamas, its local government, as well as its international connections. And that is the title of our discussion today, will be a contemporary overview of the Palestinian Authority. Brigadier General Harari served in the territories for 20 years as an advisor on Palestinian affairs for Israel's Defense Ministry. He is currently a senior research scholar at the International Policy Institute for Counterterrorism at the Interdisciplinary Center Herzliya. And we're delighted that he's joined us, and as always, we will learn a lot from him today. And we will have a brief presentation followed by questions and answers in what we hope will be a robust question and answer session. Thank you.
Good morning. Actually, it's a good afternoon. thank you for representing me. I will try in the next 30 minutes or so to make a short view or panorama about the situation as I see it in the territories from our desk. What I will try to do is to give a little bit from everything, a little bit about the terror, a little bit about the inside politics. Each one of them is connected, of course. Economy, the balance of forces, and other problems that I see. No doubt that the picture, as I look at it today, is the most complex picture in the territories ever seen by me since I started to work on this field in 1977. I will try to say, Judge, that first of all, we see a growing or developing alliance, strategic alliance, between Iran and the refugial forces, Islamic but also refugial forces, in the territories. Not that we didn't have connections like this before, but this is strengthening and growing in a very rapid way, with all the results that come out of it. I will urge that we see an Iranian experiment, renewed experiment, to try and to surround Israel from three different sides, from the north, Hezbollah, by rebuilding Hezbollah. When I say Iran, I mean immediately Syria, from the West Bank, not so successful until now, but they might succeed better in the future, and from the Gaza Strip. And I'm not talking yet about the inside of Israel, meaning recruiting of Israeli Arab citizens to their services. I will talk about the new efforts to build what I called PLO number 3. That's a terminology that used by Khaled Mashal, meaning to overtake or to overcome Fatah and take the rule and take the at least part of the control on the PLO institutions, or at least to build a parallel to it. I will try to say that we see, without paying a lot of attention to it, the building of two Palestinian states, one in Gaza and the other one in the West Bank. One might say states between quotation marks, but two different entities that behave differently. I will try to urge that we won't see elections, not in the next 6 months and not in the next year, as the Abu Mazen and others say. I am sorry to say that I think that the IDF will have to, although it doesn't want, to enter Gaza in a very wide-scale operation in the next year, if not in the next 6 months. I try to produce here a picture in which Hamas feels that they succeed to break the siege that the quartet, the Western world, in this degree or other, tries to put on them until they don't respond to the demands of the quartet and the Western world, the United States. And I will try to deal also with what I call underneath streams in the ethos, the national ethos of the Palestinians, things that maybe is not familiar to all of you. It's very hard for me to speak to such a big forum because I know that each one of you have a different background. Some of you deal with this daily. Some of them you deal with it only once a week maybe or read only the papers. For me it's hard because I always ask myself when I come to such a forum, what can I renew for you? What's something new I can put to you? And maybe in this field of the society and politics, I'll be able to renew also something. I like to use cartoons that the Palestinians use themselves because I tell some of you all the time and when we meet, that, you know, I know some of the people here, that the Palestinians say, you Israelis don't understand us. You don't understand our mind. So what I do, I bring what they write or what they paint. And this is a cartoon from 2 days ago in El Hayat El Jadida, in the paper of the PA. And it says, and I translate here, this is the, what they say, Mufaradat Zaman. I understand that some of the people here speaks Arabic, which means the negotiations of long time ago. How they looked, okay? Mufaradat El Yom, the negotiations of today, how they look. Okay, so that's, if you ask me, reflect exactly the big split and the big, very deep split that you have inside the Palestinian people and inside the Palestinian politics, meaning that if they negotiated with Israel in the past about Hudna, okay, or about some ceasefire, today they negotiate between themselves, okay, between the, generally the block of the refusals, mainly Hamas and others, and we see that the others are not only Islamic Jihad, and from the other side, we'll see, of course, the Fatah. Now, what is the main problem in the Palestinian people? If I can put it very, very fast, and here again I want to use this. If you ask me, the main split in the Palestinian people is, and this is, by the way, to my humble opinion, and those of you who know me for the last 20 years, I urged it and I shouted it for years, that the Islamic bloc has for many years, it's not in the last year, not 2 years ago, not for because of the Intifada, for the last 20 or 30 years, had 40% of support inside the Palestinian territories of the Palestinian people. And actually what you saw in the last elections, municipalities and elections for the parliament, is when they went to elections and they were ready to go to elections, when I say they, I mean the Islamic bloc, they showed that they have the 40% at least. They don't have 62% as came out of the results of the elections for the parliament. But they no doubt have the 40%. Okay, now, the problem of the Fatah today is that not only that they not have, they are unorganized and splitted, and if they have 40%, they cannot translate it to votes in the field. The problem is that the Fatah that led the PLO before, okay, today lost a very big block that each one of its sections is very small, but all together have a very important symbolic weight, which is the left, meaning the PFLP, the DFLP, and all the small factions, almost all the small factions. Maybe not FIDA, maybe not the Communist Party, but all the small factions that sit in Damascus. And that has to do with the ongoing struggle today, which I call, or Mash'al call, the struggle for PLO-3. The first PLO was a PLO of Ahmed Shoukry until 64, which was, you know, led by Ahmed Shoukry and with involvement of many Arab states that had a hand inside the PLO. Then came Arafat, brought the Fatah, and said, I achieved number one achievement. First of all, the recognition of the PLO by the whole world as the sole representative of the Palestinian people. And second, I succeeded to bring to some extent the independence of the Palestinian decision or the independence of Palestinian politics, meaning not outsiders will decide for us, we will decide for ourselves. Now comes Mashal and say, just a moment, this is the second PLO, I want to build PLO number three. And PLO number three means that we will enter to the top of the institutes of the PLO, and we will enter according to our achievements in the field, which is the elections for the municipalities and the elections for the parliament, meaning we must get at least 40%, if not more. Now, this is the struggle, and you can ask Shalom, does it happen in the field? The answer is, I can see some beginnings. And I can see some beginnings because if those of you maybe who saw after Abu Mazen declared about the coming elections, that he plans to do elections, he didn't give timing for this. But everybody is talking about 6 months or so. Mashal, with Kadumi number two in the symbol, in the PLO, gathered in Damascus, and with them all the bench of the left, PFLP, DFLP, Jibril, all the small, very small factions, which was called the Group of the Tens, and issued a declaration that deplores it, that denies it, and they say that this is not the position of these 10 factions. Now, without saying it, the very fact that Kadumi sits in the same table with Mashal, with all these 10 groups, this is the first hint, if you ask me, for the beginning of the struggle on the top of the PLO, on the top of the hierarchy of the PLO. So that's my reading of the unwritten declaration that was declared by this, and I give you only a small example for this. What I will try to say is that they couldn't come to this situation without the weakness of the Fatah, without the weakness of the PLO and all the heritage of Yasser Arafat. I talked before, and here I want to deal a little bit with what I call the inside terminology. Those of you who dealt, Pinchas, I see Pinchas in Bari here, and you, Ginberg and others, you remember the terminology that was repeated all the time by the PLO, and they used, you know, some terminologies which became a sacred one. Let's take, for example, the declaration about national unity. The national unity, which at the beginning was seen, national unity between whom? First of all, between all the factions of PLO. Second, the ability to come to some agreement with the Islamic Front, although even in the first Intifada, the Islamic Front or the Islamic groups used to have their separate leadership. But at least in the images outside, they show some kind of national unity. This national unity is broken. And today, it became an empty slogan. If you want, you can see it here. That's one of the, again, their cartoon. Wahda Wataniya, this is the saving lifesaver, okay? The lifesaver. It's written Wahda Wataniya, the national unity, and here's the Palestinian people. Meaning, no more national unity became, even took some extent a joke. Or let's take, for example, and when they talk about government on national duty, everybody knows that this is a slogan, but this is an empty story from inside because there is not any national unity, real national unity behind. Why? Because the splits are so deep. The second one is, for example, the independence of the Palestinian decision, what they call Istiklaliyat al-Qarar. Istiklaliyat al-Qarar, again. What you see here, representative of three factions. One is an Islamic guy. Why? Because he has a beard and he is colored green. Okay? Here is the Fatah, and this is the red guy that belongs to the left. Each one of them holds one of these three words, terminology. القرار الفلسطيني المستقل the independent palestinian decision not anymore such a story there is not an independent here I come to the story of iran the involvement of iran inside the islamic factions and more than this inside the fatah today 40% and more some say 50% of the different fighting groups of fatah also paid by hezbollah in iran there is not any more istiklaliyat qarar or independence of decision the surrounding states again are with their hands very deep inside the system of the PLO same thing you can say about syria and I'm sorry to say I know that we have an egyptian guest here from the egyptian embassy don't take it as a personal egypt saw that it has a hand there they discovered that they have a very short hand there and even in israel I'm sorry to say because everybody says to me shalom you know the egyptians have a leverage in gaza they saw that they have they sent 100 experts to gaza remember half a year ago how many are left after 2 months two generals and even they prefer to be most of the time in Tel Aviv not in Gaza for their own safety because it's dangerous I can go on like this and give you the whole terminology is changed not only the terminology look about how the new rulers of the government what these guys who are called by the simple person in simple citizen in the street el ledkun daken is beard Al-Litkun, I don't know, in Egypt, in Cairo, they are also called Al-Litkun, sir. Yes, okay, Al-Litkun, the birds, okay, the birds. How they rule their small state in Gaza. Look at the behavior of Haniyeh. I didn't see in the Israeli press a lot of writing about this. Haniyeh is not lecturing from the parliament, which is 5 minutes drive from his home. He drives, he preaches, he lectures, he's weekly he preaches or he lectures his own his prime minister's lecture every or prime minister's declarations from the mosque from the minbar every Friday did you see the picture sit of Haniyeh sitting with Abu Mazen last week Abu Mazen come as you know an official from the EU center in Europe I don't know with a suit with a tie Corvetta and Badle. Haniyeh come dressed as a sheik. As a sheik. With the abaya, with the red kafia, or hatta, folk, okay, up there. And he, not only the beard, it's not, you might say, shalom, it's not important, it's only clothes. In this area of the world, in this side of the world, such things matters. Did you see how the sheiks in Al Jazeera appear when they appear from the Gulf? With the red. Now, they choose it. Look, they are masters in this. They are masters in preaching, in talking, and also in the whole story of all the images that you produce while you are speaking. That's why the convention is in Gaza. Everybody's telling Shalom, look, they convened in Gaza or in Jenin, Fatah 40,000. It's true. But look about the difference between the 40,000 Fatah 40,000 of Hamas. The whole ceremony is completely different. It's a lot. You can see the enthusiasm. You can see how hot it is when it's a Hamas story. Okay? Fatah even cannot produce such a convention, such a meeting like the meeting with Abu Mazen, some of you saw when Abu Mazen's student talked about the new elections. How they say in the state, you don't even know how to organize a small miharajan, a small convention inside a small hall. How many people applaud with their hands? Only few. And it looked, you know, it looked dead. So what I'm trying to say is that the Hamas is not only succeeding to build a new terminology in the state as part of the Islamization of the street, it succeeds much better also in the way that they are working with the different factions, and they succeed to recruit step by step the leftist factions to their side, even if they're inside the PLO. Why I'm saying it? Because Abu Mazen say I'm the head of the PLO, but actually he's almost, if at all, he's the head of the Fatah, even if they gave him only some weeks ago the name or the title of Qaid Am, which means the main commander or the general commander. I saw yesterday that there was a declaration of Abu Mazen that says that the Maktab al-Ra'asa, the office of the chairman of the president, issued a declaration to the or order to the armed forces in the Palestinian armed forces in the streets to be on alert and so on, and it's signed by Abu Mazen, El Qaed El A'la Li Quwat El Musallaha, the highest commander of the armed forces. Is it true? No, it's not true. It's not true because the loyalty of the forces today is divided, if not more. What I try to tell you is, maybe I'm wrong, that all these guys that were Fatah before, many of them today are sitting on the fence, don't know which side to take. And in the other side, the Ismail Haniyeh is building, not only he, but Hamas is building mainly by Saeed Siam and by the money that is sent from Damascus and Iran, a new force in Gaza. They just declared that they are going to double it. Now they want to make it from 6,000 to 12,000. Now you can come and say shalom, but this, what you call systems or ajhize, systems, security systems in Gaza, they already have something like 25,000 gun holders. Aren't they stronger? The answer is not. Because one Fatah, because of his enthusiasm, because of his readiness to sacrifice, readiness to fight, and the inside organization is much stronger than six or seven of them. You want the best, if you want the best example, and that's not me saying, that the Gazan says the last killing that happened of the Colonel Roreb in Gaza. This guy stood in his house with his four children and wife and two daughters and cried to the telephone asking in the TV, the President TV, for support of all these purple squares, his friends, while a platoon of Hamas attacked him, of this force, of the Green Force. It took 2 hours of attack. In Gaza, you know, 2 hours you can cross the Gaza Strip from north to south two times, if you want. And this was only 5 minutes. No one came. You ask me why? Because of fear. Now, the fear of these security forces is not only of the Hamas. And of course, there are different degrees. If you ask me, out of them, who dares more against the Greens? This is the guys of Dakhlan, no doubt, the Preventive Intelligence Service. They dare more. Why? Because they're obligated more to the commanders. But many of the other systems are now sitting like they behave like they are from the United Nations. Now, this is a result not only of because of the strengthening of Hamas. It's also because of the growing situation. And here, some of you, I apologize for those of you who heard me before. I repeat this mantra time and again, and I will go on, of the sickness of, I think, the whole Palestinian society, and if you ask me, more than this, it's the sickness of most of the Arab societies in many Arab states around us. Iraq, Somalia, Sudan, Lebanon, and so on. This is what I call the 4F situation. The Fauda, the Fitna, the Fasad, and the Falatan. If you ask me, this is the main problem. You can come to me and say, Shalom, why are you talking about the Fauda, the chaos in the Palestinian side? You also have Fauda in the Israeli government.
Okay? Look about how one hand doesn't know about the other. That's a totally different story. You have corruption. Facade, yes, we have also corruption. Only read the Yediot Ahronot this morning. But the difference is that in Israel, when you discover corruption, the press, two main elements, the press and the police, bring the people to, at least to investigation, if not to court. In the Palestinian Authority, until today, unless one of you who works with the PA will tell me something else, I haven't seen one opening of court against one corrupt person. They talk about portfolios, about materials that they have about many people and their corruption. Have you seen one, not minister, one director general or one head of some branch in some directorate or so on, brought to court? I haven't. I'm talking since Oslo, and even maybe, and especially since since the death of Arafat. When many people said, aha, now Arafat went. Arafat was not corrupt, but he kept a corrupt circle around him. So we'll see now the courts open. Nothing was open. Why? Because the three main systems that have to support this, first of all, the system of the security forces. Second, the judicial system. Okay? And the third, the legislative system, are fighting each other. You can come and say shalom, you make it hard for them, you don't let them to come from Gaza to the parliament in Ramallah. This is true, but they found a solution. This is not the story. The story is that the head of the government preaches from the minbar. This is the new, if you ask me, in the image. It started to remind me of a new caliphate built inside there in Gaza. Now, this is not exactly the situation in the West Bank. It's a different situation. In the West Bank, the Fatah and this system of the Fatah still have much better control, but no doubt that the Hamas tries to build now also in the West Bank. And we know that they try to build now in Bethlehem and in the Hebron district, such forces. It failed because of two reasons. Actually, the main reason is the Israeli arrests. Israel arrested many of these to try to organize this force, but also because of pressures of the Fatah. So this is also part of the events that we see in the Fasailiyah. I want to say some words about the Fasailiyah, or the Fasail, translation, Fasil, faction, Fasailiyah, the factionism. Before all the factions, those that you saw here, okay, all the factions used to be seen, Fatah, PFLP, DFLP, Hamas, as something dignified. Today, you can read time and again in the daily papers about the fact that the situation of the Fasails, of the fact that they are divide so much, so divided. And more than this, each faction has its own militia. Each faction has its own militia. If you check, you see. Islamic Jihad, Al Auda Brigades. Hamas, Azadin Qassam Brigades. PFLP, Abu Ali Mustafa Brigades. Fatah, Al Aqsa, and Tanzim. I can go like this, give you accept the Communist Party and FIDA. Each faction has its own army. That's, by the way, why I'm saying that the elections that we had for the municipalities and for the parliament were clean, between quotation marks. They were clean because not many people tried to make their tricks and to forge
to fake.
It's true. We didn't find a lot many. But what democracy is a democracy that each party has a special army and militia in the streets near the polling centers. I never heard about this. Not in Egypt and not in Jordan. Abu Mazen. Abu Mazen is losing power. If this is the situation that they described him, and when I say they, I mean his people. In the year of 2005, January, not me, they said. I'm saying it because every time they come to me, you know, some people from the government come to me and say, I speak a lot in the Israeli communications and media, mass media, say, Shalom, it's not good to say that Abu Mazen is weak. Why? Because the Palestinians asked us not to say that he is weak. Because that's a prophecy that can fulfill itself. But what can I say? That's his people say, it's not us. That's where his own newspaper, El Ayam, okay? The editor is Akram Haniyeh, his personal advisor, okay? That's the way they discover it. Now, this is in 2005. Today, if you ask me, the situation is much worse. Because the fact that Hamas have developed its special forces that were not in the ready zone in this time when they wrote this or when he was elected. Because Hamas now have got what you call the Islamic strategic infrastructure and backing. Hamas says, instead of building on the West, we will beat our society, our economy, our armies on the abilities of the Islamic world, mainly Iran. And that's a changing of attitude. From what I call, and here I will use a play of words, Tariq El, they want to change from, and I use here one word which is half clean in the Arab society, Tariq El Musawama, from Tariq El Musawama to Tariq El Mukawama. What I mean is, if Abu Mazen and the other Arab states around us were ready to sit on us on the table of negotiations and deal, take and give, give and take, not anymore. That's a Musawama, take and give. If I say something, if I don't translate it correctly, correct me. Compromise, okay, take and give, okay, compromise. Let's compromise, take and, you're right, thank you. Now, Tariq El Mukarama, which means take and take. No give. And if you ask me what what Hamas is doing, Hamas is doing something that they think that they succeed in. They are building the whole system with this Iranian and Syrian support without, and the trick is this, let's show an image of flexibility. Let's show an image, I stress image, not real, of going forward towards the West, but actually don't give up our, what they call the Sawabit, don't give up our principles, which is no recognition in Israel, no recognition, of, not even recognition of this guy. They don't recognize him as why? Because he is the head of the PLO, and they don't recognize the PLO. Most of you, when you talk about the bargains in the Palestinian side, and most of the Israelis at least, when we talk, they are always try to see, and that's natural, how it reflects Israel. What is the struggle between Israel and the Palestinians? But actually, the problem is inside Palestinian problem. It's this effect that these guys, for the first time, come and say, gentlemen, maybe you are legitimate representative, but you are not the soul, as you always said. We are also legitimate through elections, and we are also can be a representative. And if you want us to be united with you, let's change the PLO. The problem is that those people of the Musawama are not ready to give up their chairs. It's natural. Because it means to change the whole structure of the PLO. And again, I prefer to use the way they show it, and they show it like this. And if you ask me again, this is actually, if you ask me, what cartoon can reflect best the struggle in the whole Middle East, in the Arab Middle East, not only in the Palestine, this is a story. The beards against the no beards. The Mukarama against the Musawama. These are the guys of the PLO and Abu Mazen. And these are the guys of Fatah, of Hamas. That actually, and that goes, and if you ask me, that's the same problem that you have. I don't want to intervene in neighboring countries' problems. Domestic, in Egypt, look what happened in the parliament. And if Egypt did not do some steps, they could gain the whole parliament there. That's the story in Jordan. And if the king and his father before did not take some steps they could take the parliament years ago. That's the problems of Assad family with the Muslim brothers. The problem is the Muslim brothers in the Middle East. And our problem is that for the first time in this part of the Middle East, Muslim brother factions, through legal devices or legal systems, have won for the first time the ability to run a government. I don't talked about the Middle East, but I put Turkey aside. Also in Turkey, well, but Turkey is not part of the Arab world. It's part of the Islamic world. And all the Muslim brothers in the Middle East, believe me. And that knows very well the bosses of you, your system, and the bosses of Jordan, and even Syria, are looking very carefully whether it will succeed or not. If they will succeed to survive, it means that we won. We, not only the Muslim brothers in the territories, in the West Bank, in the whole Middle East. That's a very important to understand. That's why Haniyeh, and I think he's not mistaken, thinks that he can recruit the Islamic depths, strategic depths in the Middle East, instead of the pro-Western forces. So the situation today is, again, like they describe it, we call it the two heads government. That's actually how they say it, how they see it. Yeah. It's Haniyeh and Abu Mazen with a car with no wheels. Where it goes? Nowhere. Actually, it doesn't go nowhere because the problem of the four Fs, the problem of the Fauda, is going deeper and deeper. And if you ask me, the accumulating weight have its own effect. I don't look at this year, the coming year, as a good year. On the contrary, I think that this could be going to be a very, very unstable year. That's why I think that Abu Mazen doesn't have the ability to implement elections in the territories. Ladies and gentlemen, he did not succeed to make elections for the Fatah organization in Gaza. He failed, remember? Only a year ago. Inside his own organization. Can he succeed to do it in the whole Gaza Strip and West Bank? That's why I'm saying that Abu Mazen is threatening Hamas to go to, when he threats, I will go to elections. This is an empty pistol or empty weapon without any real ammunition. For us, the last weeks might be look like a very quiet thing because they are fighting each other. For the Israelis, it looks, you know, okay, they're shooting on each other, let them do it. Don't intervene. This is, I think, by the way, the real thing to do, not to intervene as much as you can. Although, behind the curtains, Israel intervened, no doubt. And also the other forces, like Egypt and Jordan. Why? Because it has to do with their own domestic problems, as I explained. But, under the surface, we see an ongoing growth of the Islamic forces, especially after the lessons that they've got from the war in Lebanon. They have the feeling that they can build Lebanon, South Lebanon too, in Gaza Strip. And that's actually what they do in Gaza. With the support of Hezbollah, Syria, and Iran, I can tell you that every day you can see passing through the Rafah on the surface and under the surface, and so the tunnels, you can see how Hezbollah, Iran, and others inject experts that build here what I call Hamastan, especially in the south, but also in the north. And the directions are for three or four main efforts. First of all, to build a ballistic ability that will be able to hit big cities, not Sderot, which is a small one, but Ashkelon, Ashdod, and others. The second thing, how? By bringing 122 millimeter Katyushas. And if you will shoot it from here, okay, from Gaza, we can reach Ashkelon. No doubt, the center of Ashkelon. not some industry areas are in the south. And when it will be much more efficient and explode, it will be able to make a lot of pressure on the Israeli government. So this is to balance what I call a balance, strategic balance of threats with Israel, of horror, or fear. The second thing is to build here an anti-tank and anti-aircraft systems that will neutralize the ability of Israel to penetrate easily to inside the cities by injecting of new kinds of missiles that were used in Lebanon. At least one of the kinds of missiles that you use in Lebanon, we already think that is existing now in Gaza Strip. Same thing with anti-aircraft, so to neutralize Israeli air superiority. And the fourth thing is to try and to build or to fortify some cities in which they have the main industry of Qassam and rockets and the stocks of the weapons, like Rafah, or like Khan Yunis, so that they will be able to confront Israel, and Israel will try again to make a penetration of very big units to take it over. They will be confronted with something that they met in South Lebanon, what they called in Hebrew Shmurot Teva, nature reserves of Hezbollah, okay, deep under the earth. Now, for this, they have special experts that are coming and going. There is an expert for air condition. Expert for air condition. Why? Because you have to air condition under the ground. They have experts for concrete building of such big man, not a small bunker, 4 on 4 meters. That's a big story. So he will be able to cross Rafah from one side of city to the other side of the city under the earth, with Israeli helicopters not able to touch it anymore. They have experts for communications. They have experts for intelligence. They have experts for every field or sub field that is connected to this developing of weapons, even chemists. So they will be able to improve the chemical systems of the rockets, not anymore to be based on the so-called engineers that came from Gaza University or Birzeit University that know how to boil a local, but real chemists that are dealing with chemist industrial military industrial industry. So the idea is to build here a very big system. That's why I said that I predict that the IDF will have no other choice but at the end of the day to enter it. And that's, by the way, is a very big debate inside the IDF. Believe me, I know most of the people that are still in service, they prefer not to go to inside Gaza. Why? Because it can cost Israel a lot of casualties. It can make political problems. It had a lot of many bad side influences. But the main problem for Israel is that it has to defend its own citizens. Now, if you will have such a system in the south that will go on to shoot like it does today, and you see that I think yesterday we had 2 Qassam rockets. Now, the difference between invasion and non-invasion is, first of all, whether these Qassams will hit some, I'm sorry to say, juicy target, okay? And if it will, you might see such an Israeli invasion happens even some days from now. If it won't, and we'll be lucky not to have casualties, at the end of the day, Israel will have to deal with this. And the big question is, the big debate inside the Israeli security systems, of course, is whether to do it now or to wait like we did in Lebanon and look at the results. I want to say some word, and this I finish, about strategic killings. If you ask me, I think that one of the problems that we might see now is also what I call strategic killings, meaning that we'll see experiments to kill. We already see it in the security forces until the level of generals, but not so much on the political level. And after the fatwa, the so-called
I don't know how to set it. Order, how is it translate fatwa to English? Religious.
Religious legal decision.
Okay. Of so-called fatwa of Zawahiri. Let's say that Abu Mazen and Dahlan are traitors and so on and so on. Actually, that can happen not only from the side of some organized body, it can happen also from some local decision or personal decision. And because of the fact that the field is so full with weapons, I personally estimate that only in Gaza Strip, we have something between 80,000 to 100,000 automatic machine guns and rifles, not pistols. I'm saying it because the Palestinian people always used to say, "Nahnu sha'ab a'zal," which means we are disarmed people. This is the most armed people in the Middle East, except Somalia. See. True, not with M16, not with M16, and not with F-16, not with Merkava, but with anti-tank missiles, with anti-aircraft missiles, and with a lot of machine guns, hand grenades, and huge quantities of explosives that are smuggled through Rafah. The estimate in the for this 2006 was something like 30 tons of TNT. 30 tons, just to give you the ability, one regular belt of suicide bombers is something like 5 kilograms, between 5 and 8 kilograms. So this is a problem for Israel today. That's why I think that at the end of the day, we'll have no other way but to enter it. And we might see a deterioration if we see strategic killings in the Palestinian side, mainly on the politician level. For example, if someone will decide to take a pistol and shoot on Dahlan, or Abu Mazen. It might happen. They already shot on his office 3 or 4 times. They shot yesterday on Fayyad's car. So this story of the chaos is not only a sociological problem or society problem. It has also a direct connection to the local politics. And live with me with this slogan, they already start to say it by themselves, that there is the Slah al-Mukawama and Slah al-Jaraim, which means the weapons of the resistance and the weapons of the criminal underground. This is the same weapon many times. It's also part of the changing of the terminology. I will stop here, and because I get nervous signs from the side, and I leave you the field for you for questions.
Stephen? Steve Erlanger from the New York Times. Thank you again for that. I ask this in a completely neutral way, but the IDF has been in Gaza. I was there when they decided to come back in July, and they took over Rafah, they took over the airport, they took over the north. They spent 3 weeks saying they were looking for Gilad Shalit, but mostly looking for tunnels and smuggling. And, you know, they killed a bunch of people. But why did this not have an effect? I mean, you paint a very seriously dark picture, which I don't deny, having spent a lot of time in Gaza. But why was the IDF, when it had every right, it thought, to go marching around Gaza, and nearly 500 Palestinians have died since June 25th, when Gilad Shalit was taken? Why has this been so ineffective, and why didn't they do more?
Okay. I give you two answers. First of all, to correct you, it's true that while the Lebanon War was going on, the IDF entered more. They took
before the Lebanon War.
Even before Lebanon. You're right. But they were not inside Rafah in the meaning that I say, inside Nablus or inside Jenin. Meaning they were only on the outskirts, Parvarim. Outskirts, and Dahania airport is out of the city. And if they enter, even the days when we're sitting inside Gaza, that was a very big difference between the strategy of the IDF in Gaza when we were inside with the settlers and between the West Bank. We never entered Gaza city really
in searching from house to house. And you know why? Because of the cost. So even when we were before the Israeli withdrawal, okay, even before the times of Sharon, we never enter the inside like we do in Ramallah, like we do. To do it, you need a huge size of forces. That's also to recruit reserve, miluim. More than this, when we started the Lebanon war, I think that because a lot of the abilities, also intelligence abilities, were transferred to Lebanon to support the ground forces, the Southern Command couldn't get everything that he wanted, even to go wider, even if he want. Okay? So that's the response to your...
I also take that, but let me just push you half a step further. They did go inside Beit Lahia. They did go inside Beit Hanun.
Yeah, but
they lost two soldiers only, one of them killed by an Israeli himself. I agree the cost is high, but I'm just asking, what were the if the IDF thinks it's so serious, why do you believe more wasn't done when they had what they thought was the moral right to do so?
Okay, so I'm telling you, first of all, because we're all, for example, in the times of Lebanon, we didn't need a second big front. The southern, and even before, when you entered Beit Hanun, you know that Beit Hanun, when you made in some houses, you made this house to house, but Beit Hanun is not Gaza. You know what's Gaza? Gaza City is three times bigger than Nablus. Beit Hanun is not even an Izbe, what's called in Arabic, a small suburb in Gaza. To enter Gaza City, or to enter Rafah with all its refugee camps, and believe me, I have been there in the days when I was serving. I didn't serve in Gaza, but I used to come with a coordinator almost every week and to go inside the refugee camps. Block G, Block C, Block Yavne, Block Ibne. This is a completely different story. And we don't want to see pictures of Israeli tanks on trailers in the next day burned on the streets of Gaza with parades. Like we saw in Karame, we saw in other... So that's the idea is, if you enter, you enter in operations that you have minimum casualties for you, minimum civilian casualties, and ability to do it as much as you can without blood. And when you don't have enough forces, what you see is what you saw in Ramallah only some days ago. When a small force is caught, and then in order to take them out and to rescue them, you have to bring helicopters and bulldozers and tanks, and that's the result. Why that doesn't happen in Nablus when we enter almost every day to the inside of the city? Because we found the ways. Because it's a gradual work. It's a very strong, very, very difficult one. And the memories of Jenin are still there. So Israel, I'm not mentioning yet all the outside political pressures. It's not a secret that we don't want, for example, Abu Mazen to be seen as threat. Everybody said, when you go to Gaza, take out Hamas, everybody say, aha, you build the new Karzai. So you have many and many other things. I'm not mentioning Israeli inside politics. And so I think I gave you at least three good reasons for this. Okay. Questions.
We have about 10 minutes, so we'll try to keep your questions short and our answers concise, but we'll try to get as many as we can.
Thanasi Kambanis from the Boston Globe. I'm interested if you could share with us any actual, what actual evidence exists of links between Iran and the Palestinian militant factions. And I've heard a lot of talk about this from military intelligence folks in the IDF, but none of them has actually described whether it's satellite images or actual weapons being transferred or specifics about training expertise, and I'd love to hear anything you can share with us about
first
that.
Of all,
First
of all, when you say Iran, you immediately have to add Iran and Hezbollah, their proxy. Because Iran prefers many things to be done by a second side, or second agent. Okay. The oldest relations are, of course, with these guys, the Islamic Jihad. Okay, Fath Hishkaki and Abdelaziz Ode Jihad. These are very old, and it was done on the basis of we inject money, you make operations. No operations, no money. And it was going like this for years. Then they started to make relations with Hamas, but Hamas kept very carefully not to be seen as too close to Iran, because Iran was part of the axis of evil, because being painted as pro-Iranian is also problems to be seen as connected to the Shia. There are many inside aspects for this. And Hamas have a much more wide-scale consideration to take, because don't forget that they are not playing alone. They are part of a much bigger organization of the Muslim Brothers in the Middle East. And they have to be seen how it looks. It looks also by their brothers. Although Islamic Jihad is a faction that splitted from the Muslim Brothers in 84, but generally they have much less wide political consideration to put in. So the relations of Hamas and Iran until the last decision on strategic alliance was relations of, okay, you are there, I am here, I send people sometime to visit you, I can get what you call PR support from you, support in political Islamic systems and so on, but not a real alliance in which they say, okay, we give you now for a year something like $350 million, but we will decide, for example, on the timing of the launching of the rockets. That's a new thing. And they will try, no doubt, if not already tried, to influence the timing of the using. And you know the story with Hezbollah in Lebanon, whether the timing was right or wrong, or the shooting on Israel. Did they prepare it for in the Lebanon for something bigger, and not like, for example, a big split over the nuclear crisis, so on, or not? The third relations that started, so that's the new. The new thing, the alliance with Hamas, and again, the sending of weapons and experts is one thing. They also have the decision to train the security forces of Hamas, and it was declared by in the visit of Siam, the so-called interior minister, which actually controls a very big part of security forces of Hamas, no doubt, to train people in Iran. And when I say train, I don't think that they are going to train only how to catch thieves and burglars. That's the only thing that they are not going to train them with. They are going to train them in sabotage, they are going to train them in building of guerrilla weapons, from rockets to other things, communication and so on. And we talk about, if you ask me, a decision to send hundreds of people from the inside to train in Iran, and some of them in Lebanon. And that's a new thing. The third one is the relations with the Fatah, which were at least until 2002 as seen as two enemies. Arafat always used to hint there is some Kuwa Kharijiya, outside force that are making problems to us with the peace process, always meant Iran. In 2002, we decided that the Kuwa Kharijiya signed the agreement with Arafat, strategic one, to send him a full ship of weapons, Karine A, that this actually was the first experiment to build this strategic arm in Gaza of missiles and mortars and so on. The Karine A had to drop all this here and to build the strategic. Now, the second thing is, and that started also at the beginning of the Intifada, was the injecting of money and recruiting of the half-controlled systems of terror of the Fatah, the Al-Aqsa Brigades. They started in the north, and then they went also to Gaza. As I said, 50% of the Al-Aqsa Brigades, the Tanzim of Fatah today, are paid by Hezbollah, or by Iran through Hezbollah. I just saw today some piece in Yediot Achronot about PFLP that gets every year, but that's a very low level. Generally, they decided not to put the all the eggs in the same basket, but to go on jihad, then Hamas, then Fatah. And today they have arms in all three of them.
I have time just for two more questions, ma'am, and you, sir. And then after that, I'm sure that General Ari will be able to answer on a one-on-one basis your questions.
Okay.
You can use the microphone because it's being recorded.
Okay.
I'm sorry that the answers are a little bit long, but the problem is, you know, the questions can be short.
Okay. I'm Irene Bronfman, ambassador of Chile. I want to know if you think that Israel has some responsibility in the increasing of the support of Islamic support in the territories.
Well, that's a here is a place for a lecture for itself for 3 hours. Generally, I'll put it in a very short way. The story that sometimes is backed also by some Israeli officers, retired and not retired, and even sometimes head of Israeli retired Shin Bet, there is a legend that say Israel have built Hamas, Israel armed Hamas, or Muslim Brothers, Israel financed Hamas. Sheer nonsense. Never happened. What happened, the only thing that you can accuse Israel is of starting too late to deal with the Muslim Brothers. Those days they were not Hamas. I'm talking, the story started in Gaza in 84, 80, in the 80s, 82, 84, of starting too late, too small, and not in a real firm way to fight. And even the question is whether you can fight Hamas. Because when you're talking about Hamas, you're talking also about the civilian infrastructure. I know that Egypt tries to fight Muslim Brothers fanatic infrastructures, sheikhs and so on, for how long? 50 years? 50 years? 50 years? I heard about the leader, I don't know, but I heard about the leader, Saeed Qutb and others, some of them, Hassan al-Banna, I think, was executed. If it's not a fight, I don't know what's that. But, but, Abekman? Saeed Qutb, okay, Saeed Qutb, yeah. Okay, that's a story to deal with. Generally, the Muslim Brothers was a source. And then you speak like the Islamic Jihad. You can, but generally, I know that Egypt, I see in the Al Jazeera every day, the running line down there, 40 arrested. Now you arrested 40 students in the only for making, not for hiding a rifle, only for making a show. Paramilitary, okay. What they do every day in Gaza, in their conventions, okay, with TV and everything, for the last 40 years. Not in the days that you were there. But, you know why. Now, the story is this. Israel never backed it. The only thing that you can accuse is it started to treat it too late. While saying this, the rise of the Muslim Brothers here and there in Syria and in Jordan, it's an overall Middle East process. And it has nothing. I'm not saying that Israel have not influenced it here and there in the margins. But generally, this is an overall rise after the fall of Arab nationalism, Arab Nasserism, and other dreams that the Arab world had. And every country around us fights in own way, its own way, the Muslim Brothers. Jordan in its own way, hot and cold. Egypt in their own way, hot and cold. We know other times. Israel in its own way, very low. You want another faction? What is the story with Harakat al-Islamiyah, the Islamic movement Israel is inside Israel? That part of them take salaries from our interior office as mayors? What are they? They're Muslim Brothers. What Israel does in order to prevent it? Very small. Very small. They did. They arrested some of them that smuggled money, the ex-mayor of Umm al-Fahim and so on. A drop in the sea. So that's generally the answer.
Sure. Last question, sir.
Okay, look, if you ask me that, yeah, it's not a very good one. That was caught, by the way, in Nablus in the year of 2002. Qassam, near Nablus. A full car, full with something like 40 missiles. The industry of Qassam is going up in Gaza. Now, we used to laugh at it. And here I want to make a confession. Also, I made a mistake. I used to describe it as a, in some way of mocking the Qassams. At least in the year of 2002, 2003, and even 2004. And I think what I didn't understand is, and I also make mistakes in my estimates, is that when you shoot it time and again on civilian population, even if the casualties are very few, the accumulating effect of the pressure that you might have a rocket on your head, I'm telling you, I still say that they are stupid rockets, and the, if they don't fall on your head exactly, they fall, let's say, 6 meters from you, in most of the cases, nothing happens to you, except in the ears, you won't hear for some hours. But I didn't understand the accumulating effect on the civilian population, mothers, children, schools, and so on. Now, add to this the fact that the IDF developed a system of warning, which was called Red Dawn. Okay, then they changed it to red color. And this system is starting its sirens every 20 minutes, 30 minutes, sometimes on false warnings. So if you have from morning to night, that's something like 15 cases of sirens calling in Sderot, it drives you crazy. That I didn't understand. And these systems were brought to Sderot and to other places something like a year and a half ago. Now, if you check how many people were really injured or killed by this, comparing to the 122 missiles, to the Katyushas, it's marginal. But if you check what is the psychological effect of this thing, and here I also failed to estimate it in the past. Now, add to this the fact that sometimes it hits and it kills one or two. Okay? Add to it the fact that some of them falls on something like a symbol, which is a house of the security minister, Minister of Security. For them, this is a very big victory. We bombed the house of the Minister of Security. I want to ask all of you, what will happen if at your capitals, near the Minister of Security, almost every day, we'll have rockets. You are going to have rockets. What your country is going to do to the attackers? Just think. Italy about Switzerland, France about Germany, I don't know. Or United States about Mexico. What you'll do? So the problem is, now what's the problem to catch it? The problem to catch it is because it's so stupid. It's very hard to build a system, a computerized system, that can follow it. Because no rocket goes in the same line as the other one. Each one is built differently. So it goes up, it goes down, then it goes to the side, and again, sometimes it comes back to the shooter. Sometimes it explodes in their hands. 40% of them explodes on the earth. Or some of them, 10% explodes inside Gaza Strips and kills sometimes out. So that's one of the problems with this. The main problem, if you ask me, is if they will succeed to bring this anti-aircraft, anti-tank rockets, for example, and they will sit here, let's say in Gaza, which today, as you know, the area here of Shujaiya, comes almost very close to here, okay, or to here, and they will start to shoot it, not on Israeli army. They will start to shoot it to the other side of the line, from the hills in Gaza, on over the fence, and hit not only Israeli tanks. What about buses that run on the main road that goes like this? They have the ability, because the range of this missile is much longer. Just some stuff for thinking, as I said. I think that I'll finish here. I thank you for listening. So, gentlemen, and what hope to meet you again.
Thank you very much on behalf of everyone, General Harari. I want to remind everyone that on the 15th of January, just next week, Dr. member of Knesset, Dr. Ephraim Sneh, who is an expert, one of the experts in Israel on the Iranian nuclear issue and has been following it for some 20 years, will address us about Iran's nuclear program and what the implications are of this ongoing crisis. Thank you all so much for joining us.